Ekatra Foundation presents the Ekatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Okay, picture this. It's an era of, well, titans, right? Churchill, Roosevelt, Stalin, and suddenly the U.S. presidency falls to this seemingly ordinary guy, a haberdasher from Missouri, totally overshadowed by FDR.
Exactly. And that's what makes Harry S. Truman's story, especially through David McCullough's incredible biography, Truman, so fascinating.
So today, yeah, we're diving deep into Truman's life, the 33rd president.
And McCullough, he just masterfully peels back the layers on that sort of plain-spoken Midwesterner image. What we really want to unpack here is how this life, you know, full of failed businesses, being underestimated constantly, somehow forged the exact qualities America needed right then.
Right, at the dawn of the atomic age, the start of the Cold War.
Yeah, it forces you to ask, I mean, can real greatness actually come from, well, the common man?
Mm. And that's why this goes beyond just history, doesn't it? It's really a study in character, in resilience, things that offer, I think, really deep insights for you, for anyone listening who's facing big challenges or maybe feels overlooked. Truman's journey, it's like a masterclass in stepping up.
Definitely.
So let's start at the beginning. Lamar, Missouri, 1884. That's where Harry Truman's story kicks off. Really a product of the heartland.
Absolutely. And those early values from his parents were key. His dad, John, known for just fierce honesty. And his mother, Martha Ellen, she gave him this love for reading, for music.
And those things that seemed like disadvantages, they actually shaped him profoundly.
They really did. First off, his eyesight, it was terrible. Those really thick glasses meant no rough sports.
So he hit the books instead.
He did. Became a, like, voracious reader. History, biographies, Plutarch, Civil War accounts, you name it. And he became a pretty decent pianist, too. History, for him, it wasn't just stories. It was like a user's manual for how to govern. You see that later in his decisions.
Huh, a user's manual for governance. I like that.
And the other big thing, money. Or the lack of it sometimes. His family's finances were always kind of precarious. His dad was honest, yeah, but prone to speculation.
So ups and downs?
Big time. And that embedded this deep, deep fear of debt in Harry. Made him incredibly meticulous about finances. That pops up again and again in his career.
It's amazing how those early things just stick. So formal education was limited, high school only.
Yeah, finances again, no college. Then he spent those years that McCullough calls them the lost years, just farming. Looked like he was maybe headed for, you know, obscurity.
But then came World War I. That seems like a huge turning point.
Oh, absolutely crucial. He's 33, kind of old to enlist, but he joins the Missouri National Guard, ends up captain of Battery D in France.
Yeah.
And these guys, they're an unruly bunch. Irish Catholics, tough soldiers.
Okay.
So there's this chaotic German attack. His men start to break, to run. And Truman, you know, the guy they kind of mock for his glasses, his bookishness, he just unleashes this, like, torrent of blistering profane orders.
What?
He steadies them, gets them back into position. McCullough paints this as his absolute personal and professional crucible. He discovered right there, under intense fire, that he had this capacity for decisive leadership.
He found something in himself he maybe didn't even know was there.
Exactly. As McCullough puts it so well, he left for Europe a farmer and returned a leader.
Incredible. But even after that moment of revelation, life wasn't exactly smooth sailing, was it? The haberdashery.
Yeah. The haberdashery with his army buddy, Eddie Jacobson, opened after the war, failed spectacularly in 1922, left him with just a mountain of debt.
And this is where his character really shows, right? Most people might have just declared bankruptcy.
Especially someone looking to get into politics. But no, he refused. Spent the next 15 years painstakingly paying back every single cent.
15 years?
Think about that. In an age where, you know, quick exits were common, this act, this refusal to walk away from debt, it spoke volumes about his integrity. It became this, like, silent credential long before he held major office.
That kind of commitment, it really does set the stage. So how did he actually get into politics? Through the Pendergast machine.
Yeah, the Pendergast machine in Kansas City. Powerful. And let's be honest, pretty corrupt. He started as a county judge, which was more of an administrative job, managing budgets, infrastructure.
Okay, so not a courtroom judge.
Right. And here's the thing. Despite being connected to this often corrupt machine, Truman himself governed with remarkable integrity. He oversaw big projects, roads, courthouse, but did it efficiently, without graft.
So he built a reputation.
He did. As a guy who got things done, who was honest, even while operating within that let's say, challenging political environment, a reformer from the inside, almost.
Then he gets to the U.S. Senate in 1934, but wasn't he initially kind of dismissed?
Oh, completely. The senator from Pendergast, that was the label, he spent years pretty much in the background, relatively obscure.
So how did he break out of that? What was his moment?
World War II again. He started getting really concerned about waste and profiteering in the defense industry, huge amounts of money being spent, and he suspected a lot of it was being squandered, or worse.
Okay.
So he decides to investigate. The Roosevelt administration actually tried to kind of shut him down, but he persisted. He created the Senate Special Committee to investigate the National Defense Program, became known as the Truman Committee.
And this committee actually did something.
Oh, yeah. With a tiny budget, just sheer hard work, they dug in. They exposed massive fraud, inefficiency, corporate greed, saved the country billions, estimates vary, but billions, and made war production way more efficient.
Wow.
It completely changed his image, made him a national figure. He even ended up on the cover of Time magazine. It wasn't flashy. It was just solid, honest, effective work.
So from senator from Pendergast to a national figure respected for integrity and effectiveness, that's quite a turnaround.
It really was. And that reputation, that work, is what led, somewhat reluctantly on his part, to him becoming vice president in 1944. He was seen as a solid, acceptable compromise candidate.
And then just 82 days later, April 12, 1945, FDR dies.
The shockwaves were immense. For the country, obviously, but personally for Truman. He wrote that famous line in his diary. I felt like the moon, the stars, and all the planets had fallen on me.
And he wasn't exactly prepared, was he?
Not at all. FDR had kept him completely out of the loop on major issues. Crucially, he had no idea the atomic bomb project even existed.
Unbelievable.
So in that instant, he's not just thrust into the presidency. He's facing these world-altering responsibilities with almost zero briefing. He had to grow into the job basically overnight.
And one of the first and certainly most monumental decisions he faced was the bomb.
Hiroshima and Nagasaki, August 1945. Arguably the most consequential and certainly the most controversial decision of his presidency, maybe any presidency.
What was the context McCullough provides for that?
Well, the military estimates for a conventional invasion of Japan predicted catastrophic casualties, just horrific losses on both sides, American and Japanese. Hundreds of thousands, maybe more.
A terrible calculation to have to make.
Unimaginable. And while Truman stood by the decision publicly, arguing it saved lives by ending the war quickly, McCullough makes it clear that wielding that power place this unique, permanent weight on his conscience.
How did it shape him afterwards?
It profoundly solidified his resolve to prevent future wars on that scale. It fueled his commitment to creating international institutions like the UN and later NATO. He wanted to build structures so no future leader would face that kind of decision alone or ideally at all.
It's just staggering to contemplate. So let's talk about the man himself, that famous desk sign, the buck stops here. What did that really mean for him?
Yeah, it's iconic, isn't it? But it was way more than just the slogan. It was his fundamental belief about the presidency, that the president ultimately has to make the hard calls, the ones nobody else can or will make, and then you stand by it. No excuses, no blaming others. Take responsibility, make the decision, move on. That was pure Truman.
And his deep reading of history played into that, didn't it? That user's manual idea.
Absolutely. His reading wasn't just a hobby. It was intensely practical for him. Biographies, military history, stories of past leaders and conflicts. It gave him a framework, a lens.
So like with the Cold War.
Exactly. He saw Soviet expansionism, Stalin's moves, through the historical lens of appeasing dictators in the past, like Hitler. He believed history showed that weakness invited aggression. That deeply informed his whole strategy of containment, of standing firm. He wasn't just reacting. He was constantly drawing parallels, looking for lessons from the past.
So what really drove him? McCullough paints this picture of duty, but was there more to it? What were his core motivations, would you say?
I think McCullough identifies a few key drivers, all kind of tangled together. First, absolutely, this powerful sense of duty to the country, the office, his family. He didn't seek the presidency, remember, it landed on him. He felt that weight as a sacred trust.
Okay.
Second, there's this fierce, maybe quiet desire to prove his worth. That lack of a college degree, McCullough suggests, it was a bit of an insecurity. It drove him to just work incredibly hard, master the details, maybe overcompensate through sheer effort. And third, yeah, a real concern for his legacy, for how history would judge him. He wanted his actions to hold up, to reflect the democratic principles he believed in. He was definitely thinking about the long view.
He certainly faced a lot of adversity, Personal setbacks, immense political pressure. How did he handle it all? Did he just have incredibly thick skin?
He developed it, certainly, but his basic approach was rooted in, I'd say, resilience and pragmatism, and almost a complete lack of self-pity. Think about the farm struggles, the failed shop. He learned early on not to dwell on failure, just move forward.
Get back up again.
Exactly. As president, the criticism was often vicious, personal. But he focused on the job, not the noise. His decision-making was very direct. Gather the facts, listen to advisors, then go off alone and make up his mind.
And once it was made.
He rarely second-guessed. He knew that could paralyze you. You know, his famous line, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Classic Truman.
That sums up his attitude perfectly. Make the call, own it, move on to the next problem.
And that approach was really tested in some huge moments. The firing of General MacArthur during the Korean War, for instance, that was
I'm
explosive.
hugely controversial. MacArthur was incredibly popular, a war hero. But this wasn't just personalities clashing, it was fundamental.
About civilian control?
Precisely.
Yeah.
MacArthur was publicly challenging the president's war strategy, wanting to expand the war into China, even suggesting using atomic weapons again. Truman saw that as a direct threat to the principle of civilian control over the military, a bedrock of American democracy.
So he fired him, even though it was wildly unpopular.
Incredibly unpopular at the time,
Yeah.
caused a massive uproar, but Truman stood firm. And history, well, history has largely agreed it was the right call, a necessary defense of that core principle.
Another defining moment, that incredible 1948 election victory. Everyone wrote him off.
Everyone. The polls, the pundits, even many in his own party thought Dewey had it in the bag. That famous newspaper headline, Dewey defeats Truman.
Holding it up with that grin.
Exactly. That victory was this massive personal and political vindication for him. It showed his scrappy, give-em-hell campaign style connected with ordinary people in a way the experts totally missed.
So it wasn't just a win, it was more than that.
Oh, yeah. It gave him a mandate in his own right. He wasn't just FDR's successor anymore. He was President Truman, elected by the people, finally out from under that long shadow. It really solidified his image as the underdog who understood the common man.
He definitely wasn't alone in navigating those really complex post-war years, though. McCullough highlights some key partners.
Absolutely crucial collaborations. George C. Marshall stands out. Truman deeply admired his integrity, his discipline, his nonpartisan approach. That trust led directly to the Marshall Plan, that visionary effort to rebuild Europe.
And Dean Acheson?
An unlikely partner, maybe. Acheson was this aristocratic intellectual, very different from Truman, but they formed this incredibly effective team. Acheson's strategic brilliance helped shape containment, the Truman Doctrine, NATO. Their partnership was just vital for creating that post-war international order.
Beyond the politics and the world stage, McCullough gives us a real sense of the man, the husband, the father. Bess, his wife, seems central.
She was his anchor, absolutely his most trusted confidant. He wrote to her constantly, pouring out his thoughts, his frustrations. She hated the political spotlight, apparently,
Where about that?
but her judgment was steady, quiet, and essential to him. And then there's that famous story about the music critic.
Oh, right. Who criticized his daughter Margaret's singing?
Yeah. And Truman writes this absolutely blistering, furious letter defending her. Some people thought it was totally unpresidential, you know.
Huh, yeah. But it just perfectly shows the loving, fiercely loyal, unpretentious family man behind the resolute desk. It reminds you of his core humanity.
So let's pull back and look at the legacy. Professionally, what's the lasting impact? Architect of the post-war order.
Yeah, I think that's fair. His presidency marks this fundamental permanent shift in U.S. foreign policy, moving away from isolationism towards active global engagement. The Truman Doctrine, the Marshall Plan, NATO, these weren't just policies. They shaped the entire world we lived in for decades and still do, really.
And domestically.
The desegregation of the armed forces, Executive Order 9981 in 1948, that was a hugely courageous step on civil rights, politically risky at the time, but it pushed the country forward significantly. He really did lay the groundwork for America's modern global role and took important steps at home.
And culturally, how did he change how maybe Americans saw their presidents? He kind of became the quintessential American underdog, didn't he? He made the presidency seem accessible, like someone like him could actually do it. That plain-spoken style, the give-em-hell, hairy
Yeah.
spirit that became part of the American lexicon, a symbol of fighting for what you believe in, even when the odds are stacked against you.
And the human legacy. What's the core lesson there?
For me, it really boils down to integrity, honesty, personal responsibility. that story of him leaving office.
Going back to independence.
Yeah. Driving himself home, no Secret Service detail initially, refusing to cash in on the presidency, refusing corporate boards or big speaking fees because he felt it would diminish the office.
Wow.
It sends such a powerful message that these bedrock virtues, they aren't just nice personal qualities. They are essential for leadership, especially in tough times.
Yeah.
His life really makes the case for character being the ultimate qualification.
And McCullough's book itself, Truman, it's just considered such a landmark biography.
Oh, it absolutely is. It's that masterful blend of deep scholarly research and just compelling storytelling. McCullough doesn't just give you facts. He makes you feel the weight of Truman's decisions, you know?
Yeah, you really get inside his head somehow.
Exactly. He humanizes him completely, makes complex history come alive. It really revitalized interest in presidential history and just set a new benchmark for how biography could be written. A true masterpiece.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive, looking back at Truman's incredible life through McCullough's lens, maybe we can pull out three key takeaways.
Yeah, I think so. First, maybe an emotional insight. It's Truman's own transformation from feeling, you know, completely overwhelmed, the moon, the stars, and all the planets had fallen on me, to becoming this decisive leader, but without losing his basic humility. It's incredibly moving. It shows that huge responsibility. It really can forge growth, even in somebody who didn't seek it out.
That's powerful. What about intellectually?
Okay, an intellectual insight? It's his whole approach to governing, how he balanced all these competing pressures, incomplete information, politics, moral principles under just intense stress. His process: gather info, listen, consult history, then own the decision. That's basically a masterclass in executive leadership, relevant way beyond politics. It's about managing complexity, not running from it.
Right. And a final universal takeaway.
I think the universal insight is maybe the most straightforward, but also the most profound. Ordinary people can achieve extraordinary things. Truman's life is just this powerful proof that it's dedication, it's integrity, it's the willingness to learn and grow that matters more than fancy credentials or powerful connections. Character and effort, that's the core message.
You know, his story really pushes back against a lot of modern cynicism about politics and leadership, doesn't it? It forces us to ask what we really value. Is it the charisma, the celebrity, or is it that bedrock character and courage? Truman's example makes a strong case for the latter.
It really does. So for you listening, what does this all mean? Maybe Truman's life is a reminder that preparation for making a difference, it doesn't just come from degrees or titles. It comes from reading widely, thinking hard about your own principles, building relationships based on respect. It kind of asks us all, doesn't it? Are you cultivating the character, the knowledge, the connections that would let you step up effectively if or when you're called upon, in whatever capacity that might be?
That's a great thought to leave folks with. And if you want to explore this incredible American story further, we absolutely recommend David McCullough's Truman. That's just a phenomenal read. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.